taping right now? All right.
From Seattle, the Earth on the Air Radio Works presents Earth on the Air.
That's how it is out here.
During the next half hour, Earth on the Air's grassroots contributors share four stories about personal transformation.
A couple invite close friends to the country to participate in their divorce ritual.
Chemically dependent teens embark on a medicine wheel journey, turning their woundedness into a source of strength.
Performance artist John Mullen on his becoming a writer.
This first piece is about the value of telling one's own story.
My name is Alan Kern. I'm 47. I'm going to share with you some of my life. I have trouble speaking fluently and reading out loud because of brain damage.
From an accident
10 years ago. So my producer is helping me read my own words. Now he will edit my speech for you
to make it easier
for you to listen to me. When I was 6 years old, I had already decided to write my autobiography. I started saving schoolwork, photos, letters, a personal database. Later, as an adult, I began tape recording a lot of events. Here's me as a college teacher before my accident. I found it valuable to share elements of my life with my students.
In some ways I felt superior, just different more than anything else. It came out kind of defensively as a feeling of superiority. I was very interested in reading biographies of famous men, Luther Burbank and George Washington Carver. Remember all the
Still things? Fascinated with my own biography, I started to organize my personal database into what I called a lifeline. Lifelining is a way of recording your memories. I believe it is beneficial to remember one's life events. To think of life as a story about one's life changes. This can help you learn and heal yourself. In 1973, at Humber College in Ontario, I was lecturing on Freud.
In the spring, when I was in university, they had no air conditioning in any building except the library. So we all used to go to the library about 10:30 at night, and they closed at 11. Climb into the carrels, and then when they closed the building, we'd be locked into the library and sleep in the library overnight on one of the couches. On really hot nights, that was the only way to get by. So anyway, we'd be wandering around the library at night with flashlights because we'd come fully equipped, and we didn't want to go to bed at 10:30. But you can imagine, and of course we were serious students, so what we would do is go around looking for books that we didn't get a chance to see earlier in the day. Isn't that ridiculous? At any rate, can you imagine wandering around through the stacks in the basement with a flashlight looking for a book? Now that is kind of the model of consciousness that Freud employs. And if you like, if you take that analogy of being in a having a flashlight in the basement of a library, what's in the books is your unconscious, but the covers of the books, the titles, are your preconscious. Now it's possible.
I have always been interested in illuminating the unconscious. But back to my story. In 1976, I was a psychology professor at a university in Minnesota. That summer, I got a Greyhound pass, traveled the country, searching out my roots. I went to Brooklyn, where I was born. I visited a gay commune in Arkansas. I went to Miami to see my parents for the first time in 4 years. I felt a need to come out with them as a bisexual. I called ahead from the commune.
Hello, Daddy.
How are you?
Okay, how are you feeling?
Good.
I'm in Fayetteville, Arkansas right now.
Oh.
I'm on my vacation already.
Uh-huh.
It started last week.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you're in Arkansas.
Visiting some friends.
You're what?
Visiting some friends here.
Oh, that's a nice country.
Yeah, it's beautiful. We're in the Ozarks now. I'm working too. This summer is considered work for me. Because I bought some camera equipment and a lot of film, and I'm going to be doing a slideshow on the summer.
Uh-huh.
I'll tell you all about it when I'm there.
Okay. How long will you be here?
Well, that depends upon how long we get along, how well we get along.
I was preparing a slideshow called Becoming Myself for use in my classes.
Here are some parts of my autobiography, along with photos taken of me and my environment.
My slideshow started with a current picture of myself and then moved backward through time all the way back to a photo of myself as an infant. And then I began my story.
I was born in Brooklyn, New York in the late summer of 1945, the first child of a newly married Jewish couple. We moved south to Miami.
Lifelining is a therapeutic practice. It brings perspective to your story, lets you see it as an unbroken continuum. You don't need to have tape recorded your life to trigger memories. Just start with a paper and pen and jot down a timeline of your life, a lifeline. Start with the day you were born. What's your earliest memory? The wallpaper in the kitchen? Each memory will stimulate others. The very act of writing them down, which could take months, will transform you. In the summer of 1982, in Mankato, Minnesota, a semi-trailer truck hit my van. I can't remember anything from just before the accident. My friend Bob, who was driving and wasn't injured, tells me it was a beautiful day, and we were listening to James Taylor's Fire and Rain on 8-track. After I regained consciousness, I couldn't speak, and I suffered partial amnesia. My old pictures and recordings were very helpful in bringing my memories back. Here I am in speech therapy a few months later, coming to terms with my new limitations.
The library down
the one downtown?
You're right. Mm-hmm. Different system.
Rehearing this tape of this session triggers in me deep memories. Memories of who I am. My life has always evolved around ideas and communication, connecting with others. Can you hear my frustration trying to communicate?
How is it better?
Well, a lot of right into fingertips. Fingertips.
Mm-hmm. Fingertips.
Fingertips.
Uh-huh. Alan? Right at your fingertips. Fingertips.
Mm-hmm. It's use of it better.
I can hear in listening to myself that I am unwilling to be defeated, to be a victim. I can hear that I am a hero in my story. That's important. Every story has a hero. Might as well be you. In 1989, I felt ready to face the world. I no longer felt like a damaged person. I went to India. I enjoyed going places where people had the same trouble with English as I did. Here's an Indian reporter who decided to interview me in Mysore.
Right, Alan, we proceed, right?
All right.
What was your idea about Indian? I mean, totally you, that's the overall. India means culture, Indian people like that. But, okay, you understand. In your early age. Follow me.
I don't follow your question.
No.
You're asking a question or
yeah,
no?
I'm asking question.
Right.
What was your idea about India? In your early days, I mean, before coming to India.
Well, that's a very generalized question, of course.
Right.
And
I never read his article about me. It was in Hindi. My story is still unfolding. You will hear more. Remember, my autobiography will be out one of these years.
But enough about me.
Enough about me.
But.
But enough about you.
But enough about me.
Enough about me.
What about your story?
What about your story?
To an easy time, my back turned towards the sun. Lord knows when the cold wind blows, it'll turn your head around. Well, there's hours of time on the telephone line to talk about things to come. Sweet dreams and flying machines in pieces on the ground. Oh, I've seen fire.
All of performance artist John Mullen's work is autobiographical. Mullen is a regular contributor to Earth on the Air.
It was a warm summer night in June 1987. The American Grab train was still speeding down the tracks with Ronald Reagan in the engine house. I had a seat in coach class but was working for an upgrade. Dustbusters was the name of my ticket. It was my very own house cleaning business with 6 employees and a steady stream of complaining customers.
One of your girls used my face sponge to clean the toilet.
My earrings are missing.
Bad news, you forgot to turn the freezer back on.
The hassle slowed me down a bit, but I kept on going. I knew that Dustbusters could make me rich. Then I'd have enough time to become what I really wanted to be, a writer. Everybody I knew was trying to get rich that year. Some of my friends got involved in this pyramid scheme called the airplane game. The way it worked was that you'd go to these meetings and buy a seat on this imaginary airplane. Each seat cost $1,000 that you had to pay to the captain. After 12 people bought seats, the captain flew away with the money, and all 12 passengers now got to have their own planes. The idea was that if you gave $1,000, you got $12,000 back. Two of my friends begged me to come to their airplane meeting because they didn't have any new passengers sign up for a while and their plane couldn't get off the ground. I said I'd go just to make sure I wasn't missing out on something. The night of the meeting, my best friend Larry called me.
John, I'm getting the results of my AIDS test tonight. Will you come with me?
I can't tonight, Larry. I've got this meeting.
Come on, John. I need you. It'll only take a minute.
Larry and I sat in my car outside the clinic. He kept staring at this little piece of paper they gave him with the bad check marks on it. I wanted to stay with them, but I knew I was going to break down if I looked at him for just one more second. So I told him that I had to go to the airplane meeting. The front door opened before I knocked.
Those who condemn wealth are those who have none and see no chance of getting it.
I was so sorry I came here and wanted to run out of there, but the door was already closed.
Enlightenment and abundance belong together.
A woman with crooked, smoke-stained teeth was smiling right in my face.
The universe is waiting to fulfill our needs.
I wondered what Larry was doing and why I was with this group of people instead of with my friend.
It's an exercise in accepting
what the universe has to give you.
A man was drawing an airplane on a small chalkboard in front of me, explaining the game.
And the seats are only $1,000.
But they're gonna go up as more people catch on.
I was the only new person at this meeting. When I said I didn't want a seat on their plane, the meeting ended. I drove to a waterfront park and walked through tall, wet grass, crying out loud over my friend. When I got to the edge of the water, I was exhausted from crying and felt like a film of grease was stuck to me from that meeting. That evening was the first time in my life I really understood that I was going to die and that I might be young when it happened. The thought of having house cleaner on my tombstone somehow wasn't appealing to me. My great train ride of prosperity was starting to feel like a slow-motion wreck with everything I was working for on board. After hours of crying on the beach, a feeling that came from every cell in my body reached my brain. Everything felt clear for one moment. I could sell that rotten business and do my writing now. I could work part-time until I got things going. Only 2 days later, one of my cleaning clients, a writer, took me out for coffee and offered me a part-time job as her assistant. I said yes immediately and couldn't get rid of that stupid cleaning business quick enough. It's been one of the biggest turnarounds in my adult life. And while I can't say that making a go of writing has been an entirely smooth ride, at least I know I'm on the right track.
It is broken. Will you help me put it back together?
Nicole breaks a clay pot, a symbol of her life, and passes the pieces around the circle. The other participants in this ceremony drop the pieces into the campfire.
We commit your life to the fire, that it may be transformed and made new in this place.
I commit your life to this fire, that it may be transformed and made new in this place.
This Native American medicine wheel ritual is part of a psychiatric treatment center for adolescents who have had no success with other forms of treatment. Peninsula Village is nestled at the base of the Great Smokies outside of Knoxville, Tennessee. Most of the patients have a history of chemical dependency. Many come from the court systems and are here instead of jail. Peninsula Village's medicine wheel program is the brainchild of Dr. Patty Mitchell, who submitted this tape.
It's important to me that the young people that come here have a sense of identity other than just being an addict or having severe psychiatric problems or being an alcoholic. It's important to me that they know that in many, many cultures during adolescence, a shaman, a wounded healer, was chosen by having a life-threatening illness. And then that young person was given the choice of moving through that illness to another place and therefore becoming a medicine person in his community. So what the Native Americans say is that we all come to the world with a dream, and the dream is who we are and what we came to give away. And when that dream has not been honored or has been neglected or crushed, in the process of our growing up, then it turns into a nightmare. And their sense is that all of the violence in the world is created by our crushed dreams. And the answer to that is to go back in search of the dream. And the dream is always found in our woundedness and the pain of our life. So it does indeed involve a heroic journey.
I represent the Cougar Clan, and I will take down the flags. The medicine wheel should not be entered until the flags are up.
I build the fire, and I use four
I build it on a base of 7 logs, one for each direction, one log for Mother Earth, one for Father Sky, and one for all living creatures. And on that base, we build a campfire.
Once a young person decides to go on that quest, then the first place they move is to the south, the place of trust, where they establish a contract with themselves, how they are going to prove their trustworthiness to their group, how they're going to know that they're trustworthy to themselves.
I am a representative from the Crow Clan, and we hold a medicine staff. I tell people like when to go down the path, and I send them off in silence for them to like connect with their inner self.
And then the next stage of the vision quest is probably the scariest and the darkest and the one that people concentrate on most here at the village, and that's the place of the bear. And that is a place of death and rebirth. It's where we have to look inside of ourselves and we have to decide what we will keep and what we will let go.
The Butterfly Clan is the keeper of the crystal. And every time somebody comes down, I ask what if their intentions are pure.
They travel across from west to east on the road of conflict, the Black Road. That's the battle between Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker. That's the battle between the healthy ego and the shadow, or all those regressive things within us that would choose to take an easier, softer way.
The deer clan keeps the drum, and when I play it, it represents the heartbeat of Mother Earth.
As we're traveling the Black Road, we're also traveling the Red Road and integrating all of what's happening in this heroic journey into the place of wisdom, where we fly up high and look at the bigger picture. All of us have to take the skills that we learn in the vision quest back into the world.
The Wolf Clan is the keeper of the herbs, and I'll say a prayer and throw these into the fire. And the smoke sends up the prayers to the higher power. And even though we're all in this together, the prayer symbolizes that each is still an individual.
O Great Spirit, whose voice I hear in the winds, whose breath gives life to the world, hear me. I am small and weak and need your strength and wisdom to walk.
The whole purpose of this journey through the village is to become a wounded healer, to become a buffalo. And we're very proud of the number of buffalo that we have that are in the world acting as wounded healers.
Expressing feelings and things such as that really takes a lot of bravery, you know, to get out of that image and take care of yourself and really let someone know and be honest and let someone know what's going on with you. It's really scary.
Every day I hear somebody telling my story. It sounds just like me. A lot of people that first come out, I can see that. And I can also watch them change, and it's pretty much the same way I did.
Like I was just empty, you know, and I was able to overcome that once I was able, I guess, to be willing to hurt, to, I guess, be different.
All creation is a medicine wheel, and everything in creation, the rocks, the trees, the stars, the moon, the two-leggeds, the four-leggeds, the creepy crawlies, all things in creation are medicine wheel. And everything in creation knows its harmony with every other thing, with one exception, and that's human beings.
Like I saw other people destroying the earth, and then I just got to the point where I was like, well, I'm just one more person, it's really not going to hurt.
But now, like I'll be walking in the woods or something, and I was kind of thinking that I'm like walking on a living planet. You know, I'm starting to care more and to see it as almost like a being.
Different people are at different places, I guess you could say, but we're all connected.
My name's Catherine Madsen, and I live in Amherst, Massachusetts, teach English at Greenfield Community College, and for the last 10 or 11 years, I've been working on a series of rituals for holidays and life passages. As a writer, I had been going to people's weddings that they'd written themselves and thinking I could have written them better and all the snobbish things that writers think, and I was just curious to try what I would come up with. I'd been brought up in a secular family and always been fascinated by religion and kept trying to go toward religion and not being happy with what I found. And so I thought I will invent my own and see if I do it any better.
At a clearing in the woods on a Puget Sound island, Nancy and Peter bring together about a dozen of their friends to witness a divorce ritual written by Catherine Madsen.
Okay, I'm going to give the ribbon to you, Kathy, and will you pass it around silently?
A glass of wine is poured, soon to be divided into two glasses. A cloth ribbon encircles the couple. There are five other speaking parts: earth, air, fire, water, and the quintessence.
Who shall unmingle the wine that was mixed, or divide the living child into father and mother? What has been cannot be undone, or become as though it has not been. The separation of lovers divides them, not at the point where they were joined, but jaggedly tearing the spirit. Nancy and Peter, the time of your parting has come. Parting is not a mutual decision, as marriage is. It is the decision made in the desolation of a single heart. And if one wishes it, the other can only endure it. But because even disappointed lovers must not do to each other what is unbearable, part without hatred, begin to recover the grace of solitude.
Peter, the trust between us has failed, or perhaps it has never been. I release you from the pledge we did not keep.
Nancy, the trust between us has failed. Hopefully, perhaps it has never been. I release from you the pledge that we did not keep.
Now that you are alone, do not disdain your bodies.
Now that you are alone, do not keep silence in your pain.
Now that you are alone, do not scorn the life you had together.
Do not be drowned by your grief, nor boiled away by your anger.
Find elsewhere hereafter unashamed faithfulness and unpretended love.
After drinking their half glasses of wine, the ex-couple cut exits in the ribbon that surrounds them and leave the circle in opposite directions. If you'd like information about any of the pieces you heard on this program,
or if you'd like to find out about contributing your tape to Earth on the Air,
write us at P.O. Box 45883, Seattle, Washington, 98145.
Earth on the Air is produced by Peter Mulliff and Suzanne Tedesco. Our engineer is Eric Bowerman.
The divorce ceremony was recorded by Lowell Harvey, and the interview with Catherine Madsen by Lori Hoy.
Additional production facilities provided by Jack Straw Productions in Seattle.
Partial funding was from the Dudley Foundation, the Mary Reynolds Babcock Foundation, and listener members like you.
And special thanks to all the Earth on the Air volunteers and staff.
If you'd like a cassette copy of this program, call 1-800-800-3145. Mention that you're interested in show number 28. For the Earth on the Air Radio Works, this is Janice Kane.
And I'm Peter Mulliff.